our dealers.
It's been my pleasure in the past to introduce Jeff Walton with Nautel. Jeff has completed his training in electronics engineering technology at RCC, Institute of Electronics, formerly Radio College of Canada, in 1985. Don't look at me. He has worked in various positions from field service to component level repair to technical support in both telecom and broadcast fields. At Nautel, Jeff has spent time in customer service as a field tech and is now in sales. He's done over 100 presentations covering various aspects of transmitter and facility maintenance and repair, including a few presentations here at the Broadcasters Clinic. Jeff?
He could have stayed with WBA because I occasionally show up at the summer clinic too. Just trying to remember, who do I know? I think I know you and I know you and I know you. I'm just going to say I know everybody. Pretty much. So they asked us what we wanted to talk about. We gave them a big old list. They picked one. They said, we want to talk about this all digital AM. There's been a lot of discussion. Didn't take a full second, by the way, guys. There's been a lot of discussion about what we can do to resurrect the AM band a little bit and how we can sort of revitalize it. What are the options? And NAB Labs actually provided most of the material for this paper, along with some tests. We've been involved in tests in several cities, several different markets, different transmitter configurations. We'll discuss that. We're looking at long-term solutions. Obviously, this isn't going to be a turn it on and walk away from it right now. There aren't a lot of receivers in a lot of markets. Madison probably has more receiver penetration than almost any other market I work in. One thing we found is that the all-digital AM covers better than the hybrid HD AM. The other advantage is, and we'll see it in a second, the biggest problem with hybrid AM is that we've got a lot of stations and a lot of tightly spaced areas. And if you're dealing with a first adjacent, a hybrid AM can walk all over an analog first adjacent. You don't have that situation with the MA3 mode, the all digital mode. So as I say, most of these tests were done, well, they were all done with the authority of NAB Labs. There were a lot of AM stations to choose from. There we go. There's roughly 5,000 stations. Almost a third of the full power stations in the U.S. are AM still. There's a lot of them out there. I'm going to whip through some of these pretty quickly so we can get to the fun stuff as fast as we can. The problem with following Bob is Bob's got pictures of stuff with holes in it and blown up stuff. And then I get all this dry stuff, and it's just not the same. So the biggest problem we've got is that there's still a whole pile of analog radios out there. I mean, a huge pile of analog radios out there. I've got a rental car that doesn't do HD. Last rental car I did in, Seattle, I think, maybe Kentucky, did have HD. But there's still a lot of analog receivers out there. Both my vehicles at home are analog only. Now, I'm Canadian, so that doesn't really count. But the other issue is right now, the FCC hasn't issued all digital. If you want to run all digital on an AM, you've got to do it with an experimental license. I have got a couple of customers that are actually putting in requests for experimental licenses to run HD only on the weekends. They're going to try and build a market. They've been running hybrid for a while, so they think that their listeners have got some HD radios, and they think that actually shutting off the analog for a couple hours on the weekend and then slowly increasing that will talk some of their listeners into upgrading their radios. Maybe, maybe no. There's a lot of people involved in this. Okay, these are the groups that have been involved in the all-digital testing to date. One missing is KRKO-KKXA, the original KXA in north of Seattle in Everett, Washington. We did MA3 testing on those stations about a week and a half ago. I know I caused some gray hairs at the WBA because my paper didn't get submitted until a few days ago because some of that information's in here. A lot of manufacturers, all of us are involved pretty much from the transmitter side. A lot of work from NAB Labs, Cavell and Mertz have done a lot. All the MA3 tests that I've been to, one here in Wisconsin and one in Seattle, both had Cavell and Mertz reps, Ubiquiti reps, NAB Labs people, factory people. There were a pile of us involved. Okay, the fun stuff. So you look at an analog signal, and you've got a nominal plus minus 10 kilohertz bandwidth. You've got the NRSC/FCC mask to comply to. So you're running out 10 kilohertz. The issue is when you go over under an underpass or are parked at an LED traffic light or going by some power lines, the signal can get a little iffy sometimes. When you get out on the fringe, if you're out in farm country and somebody's got a noisy pump on a irrigation system, all kinds of things. AM is very susceptible to interference. It's susceptible to lightning interference, very much so. Okay, these are less an issue with a digital signal. A digital signal is there or it's not there. If it's there, it's clean and it works. If it's not there, well, it's not there. Okay, the other thing with AM, there have been experiments over the years with ways of putting data on an analog AM signal. We talked about AMSCAs 15, 20 years ago. And none of that's really happened, so there's not really any data capability with an AM signal, with an analog AM signal. So when we went with this HD radio technology, they went hybrid because nobody wants to just shut off their analog and go to a system that there aren't any receivers for right now, or 10 years ago when we started doing this, 20 years ago almost. So it was authorized in 2002. Blah, 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 legal stuff. There's about 300 stations licensed for it right now. I can tell you of those 300, most of them probably aren't running it because of adjacent channel issues. There have been some interesting tweaks done. Art's former employer, Crawford Broadcasting, has a station out in San Francisco where they're running HD on one sideband only. The other sideband is totally shut off because of an adjacent channel issue. And it's working. It's receivable. It's covering the same area as it was with two sidebands. You just need one sideband to lock the receiver in. So if we look at, oh, look, I can do forward and backward. Good. Now, as I said, the issue was when you get beyond 10 kilohertz, if you've got a first adjacent, those digital carriers, even though they're 20-odd dB down, are sitting right on top of your first adjacent from their 0 to 5 kilohertz sideband, roughly. So there's a lot of co-channel or adjacent channel interference potential here, especially when you get out toward the fringes. As we go to an all-digital signal, you can see that our sidebands are sucked right into 10 kilohertz. The blue represents the secondary carriers. We can actually shut those off, okay? If you're running a stereo signal, that's the other thing, you can run stereo on AMHD. Okay, you can run AM stereo too, but if you want to do it all digital, turn those secondary carriers on, you can feed a stereo signal to it. On the receiver end, you've got nominal 15 kilohertz bandwidth. All right, so it has the advantage of not covering on to the first adjacents. It has the disadvantage of not being receivable on a conventional analog receiver. Now, a lot of people, I'm going to sidetrack a little bit, a lot of people argue for DRM and say we should be using DRM. Remember that DRM is a digital-only solution. There is no hybrid version of DRM on AM. So this and DRM are very similar in that respect. DRM has some advantages. You've got more flexibility over the bandwidth. If you're in an area where you're subject to interference, you can reduce the bandwidth and increase or decrease the data rate, but have more buffering to get a better signal through. If you're in an area where that's not a situation, like a metropolitan area, you can increase the bandwidth and put more bits through and have a higher fidelity signal. You've got more control over that with DRM than you do with HD. HD, you can turn the secondary carriers on, low power, high power. You've got some level of control over them. I'm not here to judge the merits of one over the other. Point being that an all-digital signal is an improvement over a hybrid signal, as long as we can get receivers out there. As to whose job that is, I'll leave that up to you guys to argue that. So here are the test sites we've done to date. You can see we've got a pretty good combination of frequencies running from high end of the band to lower end. Does Greg Borgen happen to be here? Don't see a hand. I should have warned him I was going to be talking about him. Greg's stations are based in, I'm going to say Lakeshore and be wrong, but just this side of Minneapolis. His site is in Hudson, Wisconsin, just on this side of the border. For WGGY, it's a 740 running into a three tower, so it's a directional signal. Okay, we covered everything from Class A's to Class D's and one experimental station set up just purely to test digital AM. Power levels from kilowatt all the way up to 50. The stations in Seattle that we were working on a couple of weeks ago are 50 kilowatts day and night. Okay, they're DANs. So directionals, four towers. Actually, they're really kind of interesting because it's a six-tower array in the site, four towers in a line, two towers off to the side. The four towers are one station, and then the first two towers plus the two on the side are another station. So it's a really interesting little multiplex. They're both fairly high frequency, 1380 and 1520, so there are some really tight traps and notches. So it made for a really interesting platform to test this on. Okay, well, why so many tests? Because you almost never walk into two AM stations and see exactly the same layout. It's funny like that. Y'all put different patterns on them, different power levels. There are some that are higher power at night than they are during the day. Everything, all of that stuff, even the ground conductivity, will have an effect on analog coverage and digital coverage, either way. So we're trying to cover all of the variables as much as possible. Anytime they got something where the results didn't look right, and remember, we're not, and the purpose of this testing wasn't to prove that AMHD was the perfect system. It was to take an existing system running hybrid HD and run HD only on it to see what the challenges would be. And there's some discussion of that later on here too. So there are a pile of radio stations, including a lot of the local channels. And they're the ones that tend to be most subject to short spacing, to first adjacents, to really low power, like 17 watt PSAs and PSSAs. I've got a 50 kilowatt in Utah running 17 watts at night. The transmitter draws almost 100 times as much power as it puts out in night mode. It's not the most efficient system on the planet. Okay, we've got expanded band stuff. There is some of those still out there. They're the ones that were put on to be AM stereo only. And they had simulcast, and a lot of them were supposed to, I think, what was it? They were supposed to shut down the original frequency after a year to clear the frequency in an attempt to open up the band a little. And I think most of them actually had to get told to shut the lower one off. And I know some that are still running it, what, 15 years later, something like that? So we've done most of this testing now. Actually, I think WSWW has been done as well. It was one of the ones where we went in with a 1 kilowatt transmitter. We installed a whole new transmitter with all the HD gear because they had a really tight little pattern in the foothills of West Virginia. OK, Okay, the rest of them have all been done now. And you can see there's various categories: non-directionals, directionals, complex arrays with multiplex stations, class Ds, class As, so high power, low power, different ends of the band. Okay, now this is going to be interesting. We're going to see if I can make these audio files play sequentially. Kevin says that it's all taken care of and life is good. I'm used to scrolling a mouse over them and clicking them, so we'll see what happens. This is WNCT. They're an East Coast station, Greenville, North Carolina, South Carolina, in the Carolinas somewhere. See, I'm a central U.S. guy. I don't cover the East Coast. I don't understand that geography very well. These readings were taken at the star 57 miles southeast of the site. This is a 25-kilowatt station. This isn't the best sample because the analog and the digital are different program material. See, what we do when we're doing these tests, some monkey who looks like me stays back at the transmitter site, and the guys go out in HD-equipped cars, and they listen to the audio. And when the HD, we're running MA3 mode, digital only, when the audio starts dropping out to the point that they can't reacquire it, they park the car. Or they go back to where they can just reacquire it, so it's at the very edge of the signal. Then they call me, and I shut the transmitter off, give them 5 seconds as a marker of off-air time, turning on analog only for 10 seconds so they can get a benchmark, and then turning the analog off again and putting the digital back on so they can do a comparative recording of the digital. This particular test, these recordings were taken on 2 different days instead of during the same drive because they ended up repeating one of the tests. So we don't have the exact same audio. But here's the analog at 57 miles away. Oh, no, it isn't.
Go back. I think I have to click on that.
Yeah, you're going to have to. Hit the analog for me. There's the play. There you go. Click on the little play arrow. You got it.
Self-defense. This is NBC News Radio.
Mike Rowe here. So I'm at a Ford dealer talking with customers about how taking care of your car is kind of like taking care of yourself. And I ask, which is in better shape, you or your car?
I would say my car.
Probably the car, because as you get older, you start breaking down.
I wish I could say it was...
You heard that little traditional AM sound at the end of the audio clip, right? Okay, now here's the digital to compare. And again, different formats. I've got a better sample coming up in a second. Now you're going to notice 2 things. Number one, there's no hiss, there's no popping. Number two, it sounds like crap. All right, like any audio signal, and perhaps a little more so, is anybody running streaming audio? Is anybody familiar with how much processing it requires to make a low bit rate streaming audio signal sound good? HD is the same. We're running 24 kbps here. It's using a modified AAC plus algorithm, but you need to massage this very carefully. Now, there are some stations doing it much better than others, and we'll get to that in a second. I want to talk about data collection for a second, how we actually do this, because does anybody here work for Enterprise or know anybody who works for Enterprise? Because if you do, could you leave the room right now? What happens is these guys will go into a market where we're going to do a test. They'll rent 4 or 5, usually Ford Explorers or Expeditions, because they want the same radio as a baseline. They'll take them all back to the studio and they'll tear the door panels off them. Once the door panels are torn off, the speakers are wired directly into the recording system. Okay, what you're hearing here is exactly what you're hearing in that radio, in that car. All right? There are a few other odds and sods. They use the stock antenna, those cheap little rubber duckies that everybody seems to like to put on their cars these days, or on the manufacturers, rather. It's not the best antenna in the world. by a long shot. It's got some downsides. Number one, it makes troubleshooting any problems you see when you're doing your drive test a little more challenging. But we wanted something that was realistic from the consumer experience. There's no point in going out in the field with a $700,000 dipole antenna and hundreds of thousands of dollars of measuring equipment to say, hey, this signal will make it 500 miles from the transmitter. Like I said, it's done. These tests are being done. I was kind of cynical when I walked into the first one because I expected it to be something where they were trying to fudge it. And I was really surprised to see that the tests are being done to get it as close to what the actual consumer will see as possible. Now, as I said, NAB Labs is spearheading this. I've done a lot of work with David Layer. In fact, most of this presentation is material that David created. I should have put that caveat in the beginning. Any slide with NAB Labs on it, the content is totally David's. Any slide that doesn't have the NAB Labs logo on it, you can blame me for that. All right, some of this stuff is official from previous presentations. Some of it is unofficial and unreleased from tests we've done, as I said, as recently as about 10 days ago. Okay, there's a lot of stuff underway. Field testing, obviously, is pretty much totally completed now. We've got the rough ideas on what our starting point is. And that tells us what we need to fix, which we'll discuss in a bit. Lab testing is always underway because you like to be able to model this stuff. It's nice, sort of like moment of methods modeling of an AM array. You'd like to have an idea what you're going to see when you walk in the door. You know, or you take an FM, you've got a pattern on a sheet of paper, and then you go out and run the pattern. And hopefully they're going to come close. Allocation studies are also underway. How are these first adjacents going to affect each other? Are we going to help reduce that problem with an all-digital solution? Or are we just wasting time with it? This is WDGY's studio and transmitter site. And as I said, the studio's in Minnesota, the transmitter's in Wisconsin. Because the transmitter's in Wisconsin, I've decided that the station is a Packers fan, no matter what they want to say. What's that? Hudson what?
Hudson Michigan.
Oh, shoot, I didn't even put that one was the one of David's. I should have put that NAB Labs thing there. There you go. Yes, Hudson, Wisconsin. Thanks, Alex. I'll remember you later. So we walked into the studio. It was kind of interesting because when we did these tests, we did them late June. Actually, I left here from the summer conference and went straight to Hudson to do that testing. And I don't know if you guys remember what it was like the end of June, but there was a serious wall of thunder cells moving through Minnesota and western Wisconsin, I think all the way over into Oshkosh and Milwaukee. And it was some really interesting times. I stood on top of that hill looking at wall clouds, green wall clouds, thinking to myself, this is about as high as it gets around here. Maybe I should be somewhere else. There was nowhere else. They had to drop me off at the site in one of the expeditions because my two-wheel drive rental car wouldn't make it through the low spots because of the water collection. That's the crew. They have, as I said, two Ford Explorers. I guess it's Ford Escapes, not Expeditions. So as I said, there's representatives from everywhere. We had Dan Ryson at Cavell-Mertz there. In Seattle, we had another guy from Cavell-Mertz, Mike, I can't remember his last name, and I'll apologize now. Ubiquity people, NAB people, station people, MAB guys, and of course, I was the one taking the picture. I've got a face to be behind the camera. So here's an idea of the testing, the drive we did. Now, the big thing we were trying to get at, I don't have a fancy laser pointer, so I'm going to wave my arm around. The 494 circle around Minneapolis-St. Paul. Because the station is significantly east of the cities, the west side of that 494 circle has always been problematic for them. Okay, and you can look in the MA1 coverage map, they've been running hybrid HD for a while. Oh, now I've got a laser pointer. Sure. Oh, look at that. Okay, well, let's back up. There we go. The west side of 494. This is the area that's going to be covered right here. And you can see where the HD starts to drop out in hybrid mode. Okay, it's not exceptionally impressive coverage. At this point in the corner, we're 40-odd miles away from the transmitter site. Now, in MA3 mode, and we did do a little jiggery-pokery in that if you, that's a Canadian phrase right there, it's right up there with whatchamacallit and who's it. We did do a little jiggery-pokery with the power level. When you switch an MA1 signal, a hybrid HD signal, to digital only, the transmitter power will be about 80%. Now, in order to make the tests as fair as possible, because the station's licensed for X number of watts, in this case 5 kilowatts, we used a thermocouple ammeter because the peak detecting power meters in the transmitter are pretty much useless when you're running all digital on them. So we used a thermocouple ammeter, basically plugged into the common point of the phaser, and we set it so that our MA3, our analog, and our MA1 RF currents, RMS currents, were all identical. Okay, so that gives you the baseline we were using. Nominally, it's about a 20% effective or perceived increase as far as the transmitter meter is concerned. But when you look at the thermocouple, when I look at the PA volts, when I look at the RF current draw, the power being produced was identical in all cases. Okay, so this is MA1 mode, and as I say, you can see going across up north and to the west, it's really spotty, MA1. In MA3 mode, all digital, filled in very nicely. Okay, they have, with MA3 mode, full digital coverage all around the 494 loop. Oh, this one, yes, we've got them again. Just hang on a sec, Kevin. All right, this gives you an idea of what we saw with the driving. Okay, the green is the all digital. The yellow is where we started to see the signal go. And you can see that we've got reasonably solid coverage all the way through the 1 millivolt. At the 0.5 millivolts, it starts to get a little spotty. Now, at 52 miles west on I-94, that's where we took these two readings. And I like these two. They're a little lower level, so you'll have to listen a little louder, or we'll get the board master to tweak us up a hair for those. I'd hit play on them before you did that. You may have to bring the audio level up a bit on these as you play them. Okay. Okay, now this is a good sample because both of these signals don't touch that audio control because they are, as I said, off the car speakers. They're exactly the same signal, but they were both taken at the same time. This is one of the ones where they took their digital measurement or their recording. We shut the transmitter off, brought it up in analog. They took the analog sample and then shut it off, put it back to MA3. Okay, the digital at the same point, 52 miles from the station. Okay, now let's play that analog again one more time. So that, in a nutshell, is the difference. And you notice on the digital, the sound quality was a little better on this one. This one has had a lot more work on it. Mark Mueller did the antenna system. It's pretty well linearized. The processing, they've spent a lot of time on it. And as I said, it's kind of a different ball game than conventional processing because you are dealing with low bit rate digital audio. It's something where an online processor, one for internet radio, would almost be better than a conventional broadcast processor. You want a processor that's optimized for use with low bit rate audio. Okay, so WSWW 1490 in Charleston, West Virginia, that's a little 1 kilowatt. As I said, that one has been done. So this was an old slide. And these ones, you'll notice I specify that it was completed a week and a half ago. KRKO is a really interesting site, and they form the basis of another presentation I do on site security. They're the ones you may have read about several years ago where the eco-terrorists knocked over two of their towers. They're in the at the foothills of the Cascade Mountain Range in a fairly high-rent area in Everett, Washington. They've got some interesting challenges there. Their NIF on their night pattern is sucked in so far that it's almost unbelievable. And again, we did the same drive testing. And you'll see that again, the coverage in MA3 mode is pretty reasonable, out to the, again, one millivolt contour pretty consistently. Same deal with the night. And you can see what I'm talking about with that nighttime protection. They're sucked in about something like 5-10 miles from the transmitter site. They shoot it all to the northwest, send the signal up to Canada. They're interesting because 1380 runs sports. 1520 is all music, like Greg's station here in Hudson. All music on AM is kind of an unique and interesting thing these days, although 20, 30 years ago it was pretty common. Back when receivers actually had this little thing called bandwidth and stations had this little thing called dynamic range. All right, so again with KKXA's daytime, I'm keeping an eye on that clock because I don't want Linda standing in the back going, hey. See, since they put that up there, I missed that. Always used to be when I present here, Linda'd come up and she'd be tapping her wrist 5 minutes before I was supposed to be done talking. Now they put the clock here and I missed that. We've automated the system. Okay, so again, with KKXA, this station is kind of unique too. It's historical. They have the original KXA license on the wall of the studio from 1922. And it was resurrected as KKXA after some time off air and a whole lot of challenges with the you're not putting an antenna up in my view of the Cascade Mountain Range, much less six of them. So it's short towers. They're running, I think they're 75 degree towers. They're short. So it makes for some real interesting challenges on their coverage. And we actually saw better results on the MA3 than we really expected to, especially given that we've got 1380 and 1520 diplexed into the same array. However, there are some challenges. This is a picture of the mast. This is pretty consistent for what we're seeing on MA3 testing, and you'll notice it's a little bit high on the edges, just a little bit, if you call 10, 15 dB a little bit.
Just turn that down.
Well, it is one of the things that, as a result of turning it up, it gets worse. It is very much a function of the antenna system. Directionals with narrower bandwidth are a much bigger issue. It's less an issue than hybrid HD, but because we don't have the analog providing the bulk of the power and the digital riding 20 or 30 dB down, where we've cranked the digital all the way up to the analog power, those noise skirts come up with it. So there are things that need to be done. Most of it's going to have to be done on the transmission side end. Some of it will need to be done on the antenna side. But pre-correction and pre-distortion, you've heard us talk about that before for years. We do it on FM. Okay, I think all of the manufacturers now are using some form of adaptive pre-correction on their FM systems. On the AMs, a lot of what we're doing is configured. Some of it can be done with the traditional AMHD stuff, the MAG DC offset, the MAG phase delay, the things you have to do when you set up a hybrid HD signal. But a lot of it can be done with EQ settings. That requires a cooperative effort between the broadcaster and their consulting engineer and the manufacturer, because we need a sweep of the antenna system. And basically what we do is build a pre-distortion curve to distort the RF signal complementary to the impedance curve of the antenna system to maintain consistent group delay, almost. I'm using FM terms in an AM signal, but it's very similar to what we're doing. Remember, too, that on AMHD, the digital carriers are phase modulated on the analog carrier. When we're running MA3 mode, we're running suppressed carrier, so effectively we're running FM on the AM band. A lot of the FM terminology and technology will end up migrating into this equipment. And that's one of the things I put up a slide for challenges, and I'm willing to discuss them, but I'm not going to show you too much about what we're doing because I don't want to let the cat out of the bag for what you may see at NAB next year or the year after that, or at some future stage if we decide that this is actually a viable system. And again, it comes down to everything else. If you guys think that there are enough receivers out there to make it worth it, and if you've got an AM that's not making any money at all and is just there to keep it turned on, and the receivers are out there or you think they are, it's worth testing. It does give you an alternative, and it does give you the ability to run some data. HD-only AM can run something very similar to FM-RDS, which would be kind of cool. Okay, so there are some things, and like I said also, AM stereo and HD-AM, and this doesn't just apply to MA3, this works for the MA1 mode as well. Anybody here ever set up an AM stereo station besides me? I know there'd be a few. Anybody ever do one that had a day pattern and a night pattern? Anybody ever do it on a Delta AS-10 and remember cussing them out because you'd set it all up for day and then put it into night and it wouldn't look good at all, and then you'd optimize it for night and go back to day, and then you just ended up compromising, right? This is going to be very much the same because we're dealing with phase-modulated carriers on an AM signal. All right, again, the similar technology. This is stuff we were doing 20, 30 years ago with AM stereo. This is stuff that Carl T. Jones wrote, and Art's going to correct me because I'm going to be wrong. Art's not even paying attention. I see you and Kevin back there. I'll catch you on that later. Was it Carl T. Jones that wrote the paper in 1938 on setting up AM arrays? I knew Art would know the answer to that. So in 1938, a paper about setting up and optimizing your AM antenna array. AM stereo was not even a dream then. AM IBOC wasn't even a fantasy. If stations had been following the recommendations of that paper all along, this stuff would be a total non-issue because you could plug it in and it would run. Because the technologies and theories outlined in that paper would give you the bandwidth you'd need for this. So definitely there are some challenges. There are some things we're going to have to do. A lot of it's going to be done on our end, but there is going to be some requirement for communication with the consultants and with the stations. You're going to have to work on your end to keep, and similar to what Bob was saying earlier, you need to keep the antenna system stable. On AMs, with some of the neglected antennas we see, that can be kind of a challenge sometimes. I've run into some interesting ones. I'd show pictures, but then I'd be doing Bob's work too. So here, we're going to talk about the lab test very, very briefly. I'm running low on time, which is normal. Use it all. So Covella Mertz built the test bed. It's just basically a dummy load simulator that they can run in a lab. Looks like that. AMHD generator. They've got basically a fake antenna system where they can modify the load that the transmission system see in. It's just a little low power, basically an ubiquity exciter. But it gives them the ability to sort of model this stuff and have a rough idea going into it what they're going to see. Again, you like to know when you walk in. You don't like these unpleasant surprises. All right, obviously there are things you can find more information on our website here and there. YouTube, we do the occasional webinar. Don't think we've done an AMHD one yet. I don't know if Chuck's in the room, but no, I meant Chuck Kelly. Sorry, my Chuck, not WBA Chuck. That's a webinar that we may have to look at some point. See, oh yes, mandatory PR stuff there. Wait, look, sales guy did his commercial, okay. Any questions on this stuff? Look at that, 5 minutes on the nose. Yes, Art. Come on, Tom. All right, Keith's our official microphone runner. Is this thing on?
All right, is it on? That? There you go. All right. As an owner of an AM, FM, HD radio for the last 10 years, I've had plenty of chances to observe what's going on with on-road testing. And one of the things I found out, now, of course, I'm dealing with all hybrid digital AMs in power, station powers, ranging from a kilowatt to 50,000 down in Chicago. But one of the things I've noticed is that when you get near a power line or something that really interferes with a normal normal analog signal, you will lose the HD. Now, with MA3, is this going to be an issue also?
Less of an issue, but it's not going to totally go away. I mean, it's still AM. You can't defeat the laws of physics. When a signal totally swamps an AM frequency, it will totally swamp because the receiver can't find anything to lock onto. However, the odds of it picking enough digital data up to actually lock in tend to be better than they do with an analog signal, and much better than with the hybrid because we've got the digital carriers almost 20 dB higher than they are in an MA1 in a hybrid system. So we've got a lot more power to play with.
I'm an owner, not an engineer, and I kind of look at things simplistically and more cost efficiently. I've got an old Radio Shack tabletop radio, the AM. I live here in Middleton, listen to 1550, a country music station. Quality's fantastic. I switched to FM on this tabletop. Doesn't sound hardly any different. I have several other radios the same way. I have an old AM car radio that still sounds fantastic. They put crap in the last 20 years in the car and truck radios. Wouldn't an immediate, more simplistic approach be to mandate better AM receivers? Nobody's making any big money on that, right?
You're preaching to the choir on that one from my perspective. That is something that we could have solved 10, 15, 20 years ago. Part of the problem became that, especially on AM, as cars went more and more to electronic ignitions, electric fuel pumps, electric accelerators, the electric noise level in the car has gotten increased to the point that cutting down the bandwidth was one of the ways to make it less objectionable. And I think, I don't know this for a fact, and if there's a car manufacturer rep in here, I'll plead ignorance. But I suspect the other theory was if we drive down the bandwidth on this and make it sound like crap, that they'll all switch to FM where we don't have these problems. I mean, BMW this year pulled AM out of one of their models totally. You know, so yeah, I don't disagree with you. That would be the more cost-effective and probably better solution. Because you're not going to resolve the issue of the receiver noise being induced by the car itself, and the car manufacturers don't want to deal with a $20 increase in the cost of the vehicle, because that's a significant impact on their bottom line.
I'd like to echo what you were saying about the importance of the audio processing for the digital signal. I think maybe your first example was an example of what I'm going to mention, is people trying to use the same processed audio for both the analog AM and the HD on that station. It's out of control. I mean, that's an absurd idea. There's pre-emphasis, frequencies limited, and some clipping there that you would never do on the digital side.
Yep.
So stations that try to get away with only one audio processor are going to automatically cause failure for their attempt at digital. When you do process it correctly, it sounds quite good, and I'm pleased with it. I'm very optimistic about the digital system. One other point I thought was important was the narrower bandwidth, being able to get through the directional antenna bandwidth much more effectively without the self-interference problems. So that's another factor where stations thought they couldn't do HD on their directional array. Now I bet they will in all digital.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, one of the other issues there is that we're seeing situations where people are optimizing their antenna to go HD and discovering how much better their analog signal covers than they ever thought it would.
I have two questions. I'm an owner as well, so might be a little bit simplistic here. Our station is 2000 day, 152 night. My two questions are, A, how will this affect, would we be able to go to a higher power at night in the all digital mode because of SkyWave? We wouldn't have to protect St. Louis, Missouri. The other thing is our antenna is a skirt type antenna, so the tower's not hot. Would I even be able to do this in the first place?
Okay, to answer the first one, that's more a consultant question than one for me, because the interference potential does still exist if it's a co-channel situation. So that would have more effect on it than whether you're digital or analog. Regarding the other one, skirt feds tend to actually have broader bandwidth than a lot of guide series fed towers, so that shouldn't be a problem at all. It comes down to ultimately making sure you've got the flatness on the low SWR on the sidebands. And on MA3, it's less an issue than with hybrid AM plus HD. Okay. I'm already over time. Alex, you got one there, and then we'll wrap it up. Okay, you're giving it up?
Hello there,
oh,
Mr.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. First of all, I'm glad to see okay. They let you in back into the country.
Who gave the microphone to Tar?
Just a real quick question. How does the efficiency look in MA3 mode compared to, for example, analog and hybrid, the efficiency of the transmitter?
Identical. Actually, a tiny hair better, but very close to identical. When I was running WDGY, for example, at the exact same common point current, my PA volts and plate current, I guess for lack of a better word, were within 5% of what they were in analog mode, and they were on the lower end. So slightly better, but not much. All right. Thank you very much, folks. Alex, you can come see me in the booth, and I'll answer whatever question you had.